Hello. So to everyone listening and to everyone here, welcome to the LJ Pod, the podcast where we get to know our writers and they get to know us. My name is Nabila Washington. I am the founding editor in chief of Lucky Jefferson, and we're joined here today by Victoria Maione, and Lucky Jefferson's newest marketing and social media intern, and Fareh Malik, a poet who was first accepted into Lucky Jefferson's fifth issue, Meliora, and who was most recently nominated by yours truly for Best of the Net. And most recently, he made the final cut, so he's officially Best of the Net. So excited to speak to you today, Fareh. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. I've had the honor of being in Lucky Jefferson and being in many journals, but Lucky Jefferson from many different aspects was one of my favorites. So it means a lot that you guys are the ones that are interviewing me.
Yeah, thank you. And how are you, Victoria?
I'm good. I'm excited to be on my first day of spring break and spend it here. I'm excited to talk to you all. So let's get to this.
Awesome. So wonderful. Let's jump in. So the first question, Fareh, how would you describe your writing style? What inspires your work?
I think I've always been really inspired by poetry that was accessible to audiences that didn't have to have an MFA just to read some poetry. I've always had an immense respect for technical poetry, but the ones that have resonated with me have been artists like Saul Williams, Rudy Francisco, Hanif Abdurraqib, like, yes. These people who like spoke in a language that was, it felt like I was speaking to them directly, and it didn't feel like I had to jump through 10 hoops to like kind of understand what they're saying. So I like to think that I'm really inspired by that when I write. Not so accessible. I mean, like, we're in like the rupee core generation, right? Where micro poetry and very simple concepts have become really popular, and because they're really accessible to a wide audience and they're really accessible via social media, I'm also not all the way on that side. I'm like, I feel like I'm kind of in the middle where I like my metaphorical writing, I like my free verse, but I like to do it in a way that if you have even a little bit of experience with poetry, you can have some fun.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Hanif Abdurraqib, because I was just talking to Victoria. I was like, Fareh's work reminds me so much of Hanif's work.
Oh my God.
Like his,
that
like,
is the biggest compliment.
Yeah, like his sermon-esque, I don't know, like run-on sentence in a good way type writing. It's like very impactful. Like, I love it.
I wrote the poem that was published in Lucky Jefferson. I wrote it almost directly after I had read The Crown Ain't Worth Much.
Wow.
And it's funny enough that I actually spoke to him. I reached out to him. I was running this event called Poets for Palestine, which is a fundraiser for Islamic Relief Canada for Palestine when it was being bombed. And I reached out to Hanif and I was like, hey man, like, do you want to perform at this? And I didn't even expect to hear back from him. And he just like messaged me back in 15 minutes and was like, hey, I'm booked up that day, but I'm going to market this for you. Like, I'm going to post it on my story.
Wow.
And he was just super.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I'm going to pass it over to Victoria for the next question.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely sounds incredible. These are very modern writers. And what was the story of you becoming a writer? Because these are, like I said, modern writers. So did they have impacts on your writing? Were you always striving to be a writer and things like that?
I was not always striving to be a writer. In fact, when I was in high school, I was told not to be a writer by my English teacher. I got involved in hip hop and rap real early. And so in high school, I used to rap for, and I'm not saying I was a good rapper. I started rapping with this group called St. Clair Book Club. And we were making tracks. And then I got really inspired by Saul Williams at the time. And so I said, let me try spoken word. Let me try transitioning a little bit. And this is almost like an inspiration for my style of writing as well, is that I went to a talent show and I recited something, and I had everyone come up to me after and be like, that was a dope rap, but where was the beat? And I was like, that wasn't a rap. That was And in my heart, at that point I was like, okay, these two are separate things in my heart. They're both there in my heart, but they're separate. It was like rap with its flows and cadence and rhyme scheme, and spoken word with its I wouldn't say technical, but more like metaphorical nature. So that's kind of why when I do spoken word, it's not the most flowy. It's very like transcription of literary work. But I wasn't always writing, but I was doing spoken word since 2012. I only started writing 2 years ago. And I only started marketing my debut book 1 year ago. And I'm very happy to say that it is coming out this year.
Oh, very exciting. So it sounds like rap kind of drew you to poetry. What would you say draws you to poetry?
I grew up on my favorite rapper of all time. Not of all time. One of them was Lupe Fiasco from Chicago. And he always hit my heart in a certain way because he always had some sort of social justice aspect to his work. It was like, what are we talking about today? So he had some work where it's like, okay, well, what's this song going to be about? It's going to be about how calling women bitches is bad. You know what I'm saying? Like the hip hop standard is calling women bitches and that's not okay. And here's what the song is about. And I always found it really informative and cool that you could affect change from that artistic side, coming from like, I'm Pakistani. My parents are from Pakistan. So I was one of those immigrant children that was told, no, like you can't do that. Like go be a doctor, go be an engineer. So it was really interesting to me to be like, yo, this guy is doing so much to the community from the artistic side of things. That's kind of why I want to, what I want to do in my work. So a lot of it really deals with mental health, racialization, social justice, stuff like that, Islamophobia.
Do you like Chance the Rapper?
I love Chance the Rapper.
Okay, I was like, he mentioned Lupe, he might like Chance.
So would you say that I'm skipping around the questions because the conversation is skipping around with the questions, you know, but do you feel like, when does poetry need to be political, or is it always political?
I don't think poetry needs to always be political, because I feel like a lot of the fun of poetry is like, let me just write about something that I want to write about. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, this coffee I'm having is so good. Let me write poetry about that. It doesn't necessarily have to be political. But I do think that a poet's responsibility is to have something meaningful to say. No matter what it is that you're writing about, there has to be some sort of message or some sort of thing that you're getting across that is new or creative in a new way. Because if you're just recreating something that someone's already done, that's no fun for the community. Something that I hadn't seen a lot of, which is like the poem that I put in that was accepted to Lucky Jefferson, was Islamophobia, but I had to make it, what about my Islamophobic experiences can bring something new to the table? And so I kind of did this run-on sentence prose poetry structure that shows a circular nature of hatred, right? Mm-hmm. How does your hate fuel my hate? How does my hate then fuel your hate? And so I do think that whenever you're writing about even something as trivial as like a cup of coffee, you should be bringing something forth to the table. But just in terms of political, when you have something political to say, you should be making poetry political.
Yeah. And you said all poets should have something meaningful to say. And obviously you have a lot of meaningful things to say. What would you say is your main something meaningful?
My main one.
If that makes sense.
There's a lot of things that I feel passionately about, so I don't want to make it seem like I don't, those aren't at the forefront. But the one common thread that I find in all the work I'm doing so far is I'm trying to create a situation in a community that people can see people who are traditionally valued as less than human and look at them as equal and of value. Working with LGBTQ artists, working with Indigenous artists, Black people of color, gender fluid, just being able to say like, well, I actually just came back from an event in Edmonton. I don't know if you guys know where Edmonton is. It's in Canada. But I was just in Edmonton yesterday, just got back, where the entire conference was about how do we increase diversity and value of Muslim artists, and taking those values and just applying it to every underrepresented group, disabled people, is kind of what I really strive to do.
And with that, I think I'll pass it over to you, Nabil. I don't think there's much for me to say with that. That was great.
Wonderful. All right. So let's talk about the poem. After 9/11, the war spilled into our hometowns and made us grow up too fast. And my homie sister don't wear her hijab no more. You're unpacking a lot in this poem, which is why I loved it immediately. I think I teared up like reading it. Sometimes I get really like emotional reading stuff and I'm just like, oh my God. But you're unpacking xenophobia, Islamophobia, racism in such a precise yet distinct way. Can you describe how this poem came to be?
Honestly, the first thing that inspired it was probably, it was a tweet that I saw that spelled Muslim as Moslem. It was M-O-Z-L-E-M. And it kind of spiraled in my head to, you know, it's Muslim. You know that. You have that information we live in a very privileged time where like all the information in the world is at our fingertips.
Right.
Like you have this information in front of you. You're kind of choosing not to see it. And that idea of, I should know better, but I don't, because I'm blinded by something, you know? Again, like I'm throwing it back to this conference I was at because it was so valuable, but it's called The Mosquers, if anyone's listening and wants to check it out. The Mosquers in Edmonton. We kind of talked about, well, a lot of people, specifically in America, their only experience with Muslim people is through CNN or Fox News. Mm-hmm. They don't know Muslims in their real life. And so what are we blinded by as populations? Are we blinded by the news that it's giving us false information about us, you know, a population of people? Are we blinded by, and then it kind of turned into, okay, well, what if we're blinded by hate and fear and grief? And what have, you know, like I had friends who said, well, this dude jumped my cousin, I'm going to go jump him now. Okay, well, that dude's older cousin's now going to jump me. And it felt very circular and destructive. And that was kind of the inspiration behind that how does this fuel the discord between essentially what is like white Canadian people and primarily Muslim, but Muslim and underrepresented people in Canada.
Awesome. So why Lucky Jefferson? Like what compelled you to submit that particular piece to Lucky Jefferson? I felt so fortunate after the fact. I was like, whew, I'm glad this wasn't accepted anywhere else, but like, why us?
Lucky Jefferson. So I was infatuated with Lucky Jefferson almost right away because I absolutely loved the, before I even read anything from Lucky Jefferson, I loved the artwork. The cover art and the art on the website and the logo, I was just drawn to it. I don't know, I can't explain it. I guess that's kind of the effect of visual art, is that you just have like this innate like resonance. But I saw it and I was like, this looks dope. And then when I started looking into it, and as one does before they submit to journals, I was like, I feel like Lucky Jefferson is on the come up. I feel like they're like on that emerging sphere where they're going places, and they're kind of like in the first leg of their journey. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was at as a writer. I was at this place where, yeah, I think my writing's dope, but I don't have the accolades yet to be like some big name writer. I've always found it more valuable to find people in the same sphere as you to come up together rather than just seeking a mentor to like pull you up.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucky Jefferson, and then after I got accepted to Lucky Jefferson, you guys got like was a firecracker?
Yeah, we won an award. Yeah, so you saw into the future basically. You manifested that for us, because yeah, I sometimes joke and say that we're like the humble lit mag. Like we're not just starting, but we have a ways to go, and there's so many things that we want to do. So it's just awesome that you saw that in us. And yeah, we did win that award last summer, and it just kind of took off from there. And then we were featured in Poets and Writers magazine, and I was just like, what is happening right now?
No, I mean, and it shows, right? Because it's not just that, oh yeah, Lucky Jefferson's blowing up. It's that it's a quality, very, very quality production. The artwork is amazing. The poetry and writing is amazing. The way it's put together is efficient and clear. And it, like, honestly, it was probably my favorite place to be published. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. If any, how has being published in Lucky Jefferson like impacted your work overall, especially like this most recent nomination? And then you were a finalist. Like, I literally saw it on social media. Then I like looked through my emails and I was like, yes, yes, we won. Like, I'm so happy. I was like, what can I do to like just shout this from the rooftops? Like, let everyone know that, like, you know, because those journeys are so important. Like, it's amazing and necessary to see like where someone started. Not to say you weren't anywhere, because you had publications under your belt and you had this, you brought this experience to the table, but just like honoring the full like breadth of like your journey and experience, I think was critical.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was I remember I saw someone tweet, because now my Twitter has converted to like literary Twitter.
Yeah,
I'm all these writers and stuff, and I remember I saw someone retweet someone else that was like, "Oh my god, I made it as a finalist for Best Annette," and I was like, "Dang, I didn't get an email." Like, I guess I didn't get anywhere. Just for fun, I went to the list, and I control F, I typed in my name, and it popped up. And I was like, what is this, like the rejected list? And then I'm just scrolling up, and I'm like, oh my god. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, that was something that I knew about Best of the Net for years. And in my first nomination for it, to be named a finalist was huge, huge, huge. So, and that's is my work, but it was because of you guys that happened. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's awesome. Yeah, the way they emailed it wasn't like, I'm not going to shade them, but like, it was a little confusing, because I was like, where's the finalist list? Like, how do I, like, you had to navigate some pages. And I was like, yes, like, I'm going to print off this page, laminate this moment. That's amazing. With that, I'm going to pass it over to Victoria for the next question.
Yeah, I mean, lots of great things, but what would you say your least favorite thing is about writing?
So here's a weird quirk about me in terms of being able to write, is that I find it really, really hard to write at home. When I have distractions like TV and like video games and stuff like that, I don't write. I don't get inspired to write very often. And so going out to a coffee shop or like the library and getting some work done is vital. My least favorite part of writing over the past couple of years is that it's been COVID. And so a lot of places have been shut down, and I haven't been able to harness like my inspiration at home like I would have liked. I've I don't know if I'm even allowed to speak about this, but technically I'm working on my I'm working on my second book right now. And so being able to like have to write for that and like not feeling it at home is difficult. So that's one of my least favorite. The other least favorite is just like, I don't like the stage of, you know, when writers tell you just write whatever you have and then you'll go back and you'll fix it and you'll change it and it'll become good. It'll suck at first. That I hate that stage because I hate like logging off of my laptop and then leaving that rough poem in my documents and
oh, yeah.
Sucking. I'm just like thinking about it. I'm like, oh, I just want to go fix it. So I'm not a huge fan of that, but you know, that's kind of the process. You got to grind it out.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a struggle. Struggle for all of us. Jeez, what is those Monday blues? But so you said you're working on your second book. What advice do you have for poets putting themselves out there for their first or even their second chapbook?
I would say the same advice that was given to me by a colleague, because clearly it works, which is be genuine, be vulnerable. We live in the age of social media. Everyone is being fake on every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
Be genuine in the place of being fake and trying to fake it till you make it. Just be raw, essentially. You are who you are. You are your lived experiences. Harness that there's power in that. That's not just something to be traumatized by. There's power in it. So take that, use it to your advantage. And then in terms of writing, just write all the time and write whatever you have. It's funny because I just said I hate that. But it works.
Yeah.
But it works though. Yeah, just write. And you will eventually either start seeing a positive shift in like the quality of your writing, or you'll come back to poems and writing that you weren't necessarily the best and then fix them up. In my debut manuscript, Streams That Lead Somewhere, there's like four or five poems that I wrote at the beginning of my writing career that I finished the manuscript. I came back to those ones and I was like, this is terrible. This is like quite bad. And I fixed them up and I shifted the order around and I absolutely love them now. So just always be writing, always be changing, rewriting, editing. You'll get there.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I should ask my question or if I should pass it off to Nabila because we have two questions left, I believe.
Yeah, you can ask your question because I think my question's more okay. Like finito, like wrapping it up.
A wrap up. Yeah. Okay. Same idea. Perfect. All right. So what is one thing you want the Lucky Jefferson community or your supporters to know about you?
Something that I want them to know about me, like a fun fact?
Yeah. I mean, it could be whatever your heart desires. It could be a fun fact. It could be like something about your poetry.
I think that poetry is amazing. I love poetry. It's my first love in literature. I'm starting to get into different forms of writing, kind of like inter-art collaborations and interliterary collaborations. So poetry meets essay collections, stuff like that. It's something that I'm working on and working towards. But a fun fact, I feel like, okay, so this is something that people wouldn't know about me is I've actually been for about 10 years I've been a dancer. I've been a hip-hop dancer and choreographer and instructor, which is cool in its own right, but is really shaping what I'm doing now, which is a lot of the arts institutions in Canada right now are leaning towards theater work. A lot of grants and funding opportunities are going towards that, so being able to use my dance background and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to choreograph an entire dance set and we're going to do it to my spoken word. And we're going to create this like dance spoken word amalgamation kind of thing, little experiment. is something that we're actively working on, and there's some stuff in the works. So yeah, that's a cool thing. It's a little fun fact.
That sounds awesome. Were you going to say something, Victoria? Yeah.
No, I was going to say that definitely sounds super fun. I'm just like, that sounds so fun. it reminds me of this thing called Arts by the People. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. I don't know if they have that near you guys. One of my professors was telling me about it, and they do like workshops for that. And like it's like a community builder too.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Really cool.
Awesome. Well, with that, I'm going to ask the last question, which is there something editors and presses can do more to support emerging writers? Like, what could I or like any other editor who cares just a smidge, you know, do beyond just editing and compiling publications?
I really enjoy presses that prioritize certain submissions for emerging writers specifically. And I've been in a couple journals where when I was an emerging writer, I was accepted as an emerging writer. But then when it came to publishing the print journal, it was like my poem within a sea of other very like well accredited poets. And so there would be no way to know who the emerging artists were in that journal. And I think there's a value in that, because when you see prominent writers and readers who have one issue of a journal that's dedicated only to emerging artists, you know that every single, or you have a journal that has a specific emerging artist section, you know that you can quantify how good their work is based on the other authors. So you could say, oh, well, Farah just had a poem and he's been in the game for 2 years. And this guy has been writing for 6 months, and the quality is like comparable. And so this guy, although he's an emerging artist, should maybe be held at a higher level than he is at right now. And so you just be able to have those opportunities there. Like we have started seeing a shift in opportunities for BIPOC and LGBTQ, all kinds of underrepresented voices. To have that for emerging writers and people getting into the field as well would be really cool. And one of the things that really helped me as an emerging writer was when I got rejected from something, a couple journals would be like, hey, listen, I really love your work. It wasn't a right fit for us specifically. Here is 3 journals that I think you should submit to and give them my reference. And I would consistently get published in those ones. So as an emerging writer, you don't really know how to navigate that community. Giving that guidance from a editor's perspective was really valuable to me.
Good to know. Yeah. I agree with that. And I also think that, I think we posted like a shady tweet one time that was like, normalize, you know, prioritizing BIPOC writers beyond like 1 month, or, oh, like, you know, after George Floyd, everybody wanted to, it's like, okay, like, I'm not a fad. Our cultures aren't a fad. Like, these are issues. We have stories and issues that need to be documented regularly. And I love your advice about prioritizing that. But I also think like certain journals and publications just need to do a better job about like the frequency in which they do that, instead of like picking and choosing, because it equates to like how a lot of that bandwagon culture kind of happened after mm-hmm. George Floyd's death. You had all these organizations making statements and, oh, we're going to feature Black writers or, you know, Asian American writers or whatever. And it's like, it goes back to just being like all non-BIPOC, it's like token, like after the fact.
It's like tokenization, essentially.
Right.
It's like taking the fad and being like, okay, well, here's our one journal and now we're done, and not actually trying to do real change.
Right. It's like, no. You gotta do more than that. Well, those are all the questions that we had. Victoria, did you have any other questions before we wrap up?
Nope. I mean, I think we covered everything we needed to cover, and I think we had a great conversation.
We did. So far, as we conclude our time together, do you mind sharing where people can find your work?
Yeah. So my Instagram, my poetry Instagram is at Fareh Malik Poetry. My Twitter is at Fareh Malik Poet. My website is coming soon, so you'll be able to find it through those socials sooner or later. My book is coming out this year, tentative date, the fall, called Streams That Lead Somewhere with Moenzi House. And that's the major points. And thank you so much for having me. That was amazing. That was really, really fun conversation.
Thank you. So there you have it, folks. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time. And you can keep up with the LJ Pod or whatever we're going to call this at luckyjefferson.com and on social media at Lucky Jefferson.